Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Oh, oh, what? Sam Kerr, gone and done.
Russo's in there. That will do it for Manchester United.
Beckman steadied herself and scored a stunning goal.
Hello and welcome to the Athletic Women's Football Podcast. Coming up, better late than never for United. Can Arsenal keep the Wolves from the door? And how to pass Barca? Hey everyone, it's Amory Batson here, filling in for the wonderful Lindsay Hooper. We've got a rotating cast of Athletic reporters for you today, starting with the Athletic's Carl Anker and Harriet Drudge. How are you both doing? You good?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, really well. How are you, Carl? All good?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Good weekend of football.
Brilliant. Yes, it's been a busy weekend, so let's crack on. So first up, the FA Cup. Chelsea and Man United are heading to Wembley.
Jankovic, lovely turn. Neat feet as well. Brighton, Kerr! 1-0. Chelsea heading to Wembley for the FA Cup final.
Pressure from Daniel Carter, doesn't deal with it, Carter in, Carter clinical, Brighton back in this, 2-2. And here comes Zellum for Manchester United, and now she finds Williams, and the flag stays down, it's Rachel Williams with the goal that could send Manchester United to Wembley.
Yes, indeed. Sam Kerr's header put Chelsea past Aston Villa, and United hit an 89th minute winner to break the Brighton hearts, finishing 3-2. Let's focus on that dramatic game for United and Brighton. Carter scored Brighton's equaliser and Rachel Williams got the late winner. The big question we're asking today is, are veteran super subs the way forward? What do you think, Carl?
I think in cup competitions, a little bit of know-how, a little bit of experience to help you get over the line is always much needed.
And actually, Carl, you've written an article about this, about Rachel Williams. You talk about her winning the FA Cup in 2012. What a journey she's been on as a player, Carl.
Yeah. So, you know, 2012, Manchester United women's team, as we know it, doesn't exist. And she's winning an FA Cup there. And now she's put the final touches on United finally getting their trip to Wembley and possibly winning their first ever FA Cup. It's a nice little, hopefully, soon-to-be complete round circle.
Indeed, indeed. What a journey that team has been on for sure. But for Harriet, what specifically was so good about these two particular players in that game?
I think just their know-how, as we've already spoken about, but their composure as well. Those two opportunities, I think maybe might have been spurned by players who haven't been in those positions as often. And just, the coolness in the finish. I was watching the game with my parents and I said to my mum and dad, if that was me in that position, I'd be absolutely beside myself. I'd be panicking. I'd be like, I think when you've got too much time sometimes, you overthink it. But those two are just absolute seasoned professionals, aren't they? And they knew where to put it past the keeper.
Seasoned professionals, indeed. I mean, Rachel Williams, 35 years old, played for Chelsea, Birmingham City, Notts County Spurs. Dan Carter, 29. She played at the Arsenal. She scored the winning goal in the 2016 FA Cup final. She played at Reading and now is at Brighton. I mean, is it a fact, Carl, that these two teams have seasoned, experienced players has helped them to get this far in the competition?
Yeah, yeah. So at full time, Mark Skinner does his media huddle, you know, fist bumps everyone as he often does. And he mentioned Williams being on the bench and said the great thing about Williams is that she's completely calm and serene and doesn't get flustered by these sorts of things. And I full-time there to chat about the finish. And Rachel said, oh, well, I was bad at finishing in training all week. So when I was in on goal, I knew I'm not going to try and pull it across the goalkeeper. I'm going to go near post. I think that's that's exactly what Harris says, right? To not think about, oh, what am I going to do? But then to think about, I did this at training. Let me do this instead in, you know, superb execution in a moment that most people aren't used to. That's what you need. That's what you need in those sorts of games. Skinner also brought up how in the first half, he was annoyed that United were sort of walking to throw-ins, which is that tiny thing that I wouldn't think about during a football game. Most people wouldn't think about during a football game. Oh, it's a throw-in. Yeah, okay, I'll walk to it. But in an FA Cup semi-final, you have to be quick. You have to get there. You have to be switched on. You have to have your sort of structure there. And that's why you need people who've been there and done that all the time to go, no, you know, the quality's not good enough on tiny things like throw-ins.
Yeah, I think it's a fine margins now between where Manchester United want to be and where they are. If they want to take that next step towards winning trophies, then those are the things that they have to do week in, week out. And yeah, I think Mark was right to be annoyed for that first half. There was a distinct lack of tempo and urgency, and it showed. And there were some uncharacteristic mistakes that kind of, you know, it kind of has a knock-on effect to those kind of things where, you know, players see, you know, really experienced players in Mary Earps and Millie Turner make some mistakes that you would never usually associate with those two. So yeah, I think increasing that tempo really helped Man United get the result that they wanted.
I'm glad you brought up Mary Earps, actually, Harriet, because that was, I think that you, the way that you've just said that was absolutely spot on. It was uncharacteristic for her to make that mistake. Given what happened in the Brazil game as well and what's happened at the weekend, are we a little bit concerned here in Mary Earps, or is it she's just having one of those days and was able to redeem herself in that semi-final?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's the sign of a world-class goalkeeper that they can recover from that kind of thing if it happens. You know, if you make a mistake as a goalkeeper, everybody remembers it, knows about it. If you make a mistake as a striker and you miss an opportunity, it's forgotten within the next 4 or 5 minutes because you've probably had another go. I think obviously those two mistakes coming from Mary in quick succession, one for England, one for Man United, maybe mean that we're looking at her in the way of, oh, okay, there might be something to look at here. But her recoveries both times in terms of, you know, pulling off saves in the penalty shootout against Brazil and then making an incredible stop against Brighton that followed the mistake in the first half shows the quality that she has. I think maybe it's something that she will look at. She's that kind of player. She's that kind of person that she will be annoyed with herself that those two things have happened, and she'll do everything in her power to make sure that it doesn't happen again.
I'm sure that will be the case. So let's look at the other side of the spectrum, if you like, with the young swagger within the team. Carl, you talked about the quality of Lucia Garcia in your article. She's 24 years of age. Would you rather start a young talent like that or bring them off the bench?
Oh, I think Garcia is a dynamite. I want her to start more all the time. I want back-to-back-to-back-to-back games from Garcia. I think she's amazing. And I can understand why Mark Skinner is reluctant to give her starts. I think he should ignore that and just throw her in anyway. So in the first half, United, you know, as Harriet said, really, really flat, tempo's off, you know, the angles were just a scooch off. And Garcia is playing like she's had 4 Weetabix, 2 double espressos and a little bit too much coffee. She's everywhere, running about the place, chasing loose balls. She has a moment in the first half where she basically would have scored the goal of the FA Cup. She, you know, beats 2 Brighton players, doubles back on herself, then has a shot, and you're going, okay, great, okay, you want to win the entire game. She has 2 or 3 moments where she overplayed the ball. It was one moment, sort of turns inside, beats a person, gets in, tries to play in Russo. But it was one of those ridiculous passes that, you know, Russo is neither ready for and Russo cannot run into space for. And when the pass goes off, you know, Garcia is sort of doing the hand gesture of, oh, come on, I want the 1-2. And you're going, not everyone's had 4 Red Bulls like you have, so to speak. Calm down a little bit in the second half. And I think it's around by the hour mark, she gets substituted off because I think she just noticeably fatigued. You can't play a game of football like that unless you've got 2 oxygen tanks strapped to you. But yeah, an amazing player. I asked Skinner about that again, and he's often talks about the need for consistency. There are games where Garcia comes on, and, you know, Women's Football Weekend against West Ham, she was amazing when she came on. But previously in FA Cup quarterfinal against Luton, not as good. And if we can get somewhere in the middle of these 9 out of 10 performances and the 6 out of 10 performances, we're going to have one of the Super League's best players, no doubt in my mind.
Yes, I'm looking forward to seeing how much she's going to develop over the next few years. Question is, I guess, Harriet, why can't Russo score screamers like that, like she did in the FA Cup for England?
Oh, that's the age-old question, isn't it? I think she's adapting herself to a new role in the team. So, you know, coming on with 20 minutes left to play, you have a particular job to do and there's probably more space. Starting from the beginning, there's not going to be that space. Defenders are going to be on you. And, you know, she's got a few different players playing in different positions behind her and it's getting used to that link-up play. So the opportunities haven't been there as much, I would say. I don't think she's had lots of clear-cut opportunities. I was at Wembley for the Finalissima. Is that how you say it? And I don't really remember Alessia getting much of a look in, to be honest. So the opportunities need to come, and that is kind of on the squad as a whole to make sure that they're creating those opportunities for her. But I think there was an opportunity against Brighton at the weekend where it was an incredible save by the Brighton keeper as well. It was kind of like a overhead. Well, it wasn't quite an overhead kick. It was kind of a scissor mm-hmm. kick. Oh my goodness. I was out of my seat for that one. So she has the capability. She has the talent. She has the confidence to have shots like that. I think she could do with a few kind of pullback tap-ins like Toons against Brazil. I think she could do with a few of those to go for her in an England shirt to kind of get that confidence when she's playing for the national team.
Recently, we've had 2 or 3 managers talk about the variance of substitutes. So it's not just you replace like for like or position for position, but you have a defence that not only is knackered from playing against Ellen White, but has to play against a different kind of striker. Because Russo, you know, bit you know, trickier, likes running around the half spaces, still has a rocket of a shot, but... a little more of a passy player, if that makes sense, right? If passy striker, I have no idea what makes sense.
We'll take it, Carl.
If you've been playing a striker like Ellen White for 70 minutes and someone comes on and is not only fresh, but is playing in a different way, that forces you to have to change your tactic. You're going, oh, do I get touch tight? Do I back off? I have to relearn all of these extra things again. So I think Russo could probably do with a backup striker who is different to her, which then causes that, you know, momentary pause in defences. But, I mean, the way Russo's playing at the moment was superb. Her goal on Saturday was... I'm not quite sure she knew everything about it. It was a really weird one in that I thought Katie Zellum had overplayed the ball and it just came in the path of Russo. And Russo's, you know, just went, I'm just going to hit this as hard as possible. And when you're in that sort of form and you're a player of that talent, sometimes hitting the ball as hard as possible, you end up having a screamer like that. So, yeah. That was nice.
Okay, so here's the big question then. Now that we know the two teams are going to meet at Wembley, Manchester United and Chelsea against Chelsea, would you back Russo or Williams? Who's going to go first?
to start? Or...
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going for Russo.
Yeah, just, 100%.
Just the inventiveness and the scissor kick, as Harriet says, the fact that you... can't quite know the ball's coming to you, but you just go, "Eh, I'm going to just twonk it," and it goes top bins. Yeah, yeah. She's a superstar, and I just really like the idea of Rachel Williams watching the entire FA Cup first half being just completely stoic and just waiting.
I like that. Yeah, I saw that in your article. That made me chuckle.
Like a
stoic face,
like a cartoon villain, just, just waiting, processing information, just waiting, just going. You ready for it? You're like, yeah, sure. No worries. I've been here before. I absolutely think Russo to start. I think Garcia will probably go to the bench for the final, but that makes me annoyed because I think she's amazing.
You can't bench Alessia Russo for a cup final. It's just, you know, she brings so much to the team. She's strong. She works hard. She's quick. She's got an absolute rocket of a shot. And yeah, it's a big game for a big player. And if she's going to do it, she can do it there. And I think Rachel Williams has come on to score important goals for United this season already. And if you've got a formula that's working, I think you stick with it. I don't think it would be a case of, oh, you've missed your chance of, you know, like getting Rachel Williams on from the start. I think you know, obviously it depends how the game is going, and hopefully it's not going to be a case of Chelsea 3-0 and you put Rachel Williams on. That would be worst case scenario. But yeah, I think, like I said, if you've got a formula that's working, I think you stick with it.
And that formula could also be key because Manchester United are going to be meeting Arsenal in the WSL this week. We've now heard that Kim Little will miss the rest of the season with a hamstring injury. How big a blow, Karl Anka, is that for Arsenal?
Big. I mean, this is an Arsenal squad that's been decimated by injuries this season. Good as Manchester United have been this season, and you know, they absolutely deserve their position top of the table. It's not unreasonable to think United are very much going, we got to make the most of this opportunity while Arsenal are injured and hurt and really get into these Champions League spaces as well while Arsenal are having to deal with all these injuries. So, yeah, that injury to Kim Little probably tilts things more in Manchester United's favour. It's going to be a slobber knocker. Like, you know, this game.
A what?
The game against... A slobber knocker.
Again,
a slobber knocker is a particularly pitched wrestling match where loads of blows are exchanged. Basically, it's not going to be particularly pretty. And at the end of it, everyone's going to be scarred and injured and be like, right, okay, that was a good bout.
Brilliant stuff. A slobber knocker then, Harriet, you agree as well for this week?
Yeah, I think Kim being out injured is such a big blow for Arsenal. She makes them tick. They've done incredibly well, given the injuries that they have had to deal with throughout this season, to be, you know, in the semi-finals of the Champions League, already have the Continental League Cup in their trophy cabinet and still be fighting for the title, and knocked out of the FA Cup by Chelsea, you know, one of the most difficult draw you could get with the holders. So, you know, it's testament to them and Jonas Eidvall that they've done so well this season.
Indeed. Well, as always, if you're listening, let us know your thoughts using the hashtag AthleticWFP. We'll say goodbye now to Karl and Harriet. Thank you both so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
For coverage of the other semi-final, go to Athletic and check out Flo Lloyd Hughes's article.
This is the Athletic Women's Football Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Manchester United and Chelsea fans will be absolutely buzzing, and Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney will also be delighted because Wrexham Women are being promoted to Wales's top league, the Adran Premier, after winning their playoff 1-0 against Britton Ferry.
One last opportunity for Britton Ferry to draw level and take us into extra time. One more chance for Wrexham to keep them out. Is there going to be a dramatic finish? Here it comes! Strikes the bar! Lonnie May Walkley off the line! Oh, dramatic scenes here at Latham Park. Wrexham remain ahead. Great free kick, strikes the bar.
I'd like to see if the goalkeeper got a touch on that. And I think she did. I think she got her hands on it.
Fingers by Delith Morgan. She is certainly Wrexham's heroine this afternoon. What a game she's had.
I've got Delith Morgan with me here, captain and goalkeeper for Wrexham in that almighty brilliant playoff final on Sunday. Welcome, Delith. How are you? Are you down from cloud nine yet? Congratulations.
Thank you so much. No, I can't stop thinking about the day. My phone's not been able to let me stop thinking about it either. It keeps going off. Social media's just on a whole nother level now. Yeah, it's just a brilliant day for the club. Fully deserved after all our hard work as well, especially this year.
I've got to ask, was there any champagne, beers, gins involved afterwards, or are you all on soft drinks?
It was a bit of a mixture because like all of us, like we were all back in work or school or uni today, like it's back to real life today. So a bit of a mixed vibe based on what everyone had on today, really. Like, I'm back in work today as well, so.
I'm glad that you still be able to celebrate it with messages from friends, family on the social media as well. I mean, let's talk about that last minute save. Talk us through that moment and also the reaction from your teammates as well.
I didn't realise how close it was to the end of the game. I literally thought we had another 5 minutes or so, because that whole, especially those last few minutes, it went very slowly. I didn't think about it. I just went for it. Natural instinct kicked in and I went for it. Managed to get hand onto it, tip onto the bar, and that's enough. And my teammates following up behind, making sure there wasn't a tapping on the other side of the goal. I got a little bit of cramp as I took off as well with my left leg and my calf seized up as I took off. But yeah, it was unbelievable. And again, I didn't realise how important it was, how close it was to the end.
Like you said, it's just instinct, and that is years of experience and training coming through to make that last minute save. And of course, cannot go in this conversation without mentioning the two gentlemen that are a big part of this story, as well as yourselves and your team, Ryan Reynolds and of course Rob McElhenney. Have you heard from them any messages after the result?
Rob's tweeted as the club as a whole, like, congratulations on Twitter. Ryan's given me a follow on Twitter now as well, so I'm buzzing about that.
God.
Yeah. Noticed that last night. I had loads of new followers and then I spotted his little icon. I said, click on it to make sure. And then I had a nice video from Ben Foster this morning as well. So, yeah, really good.
Oh, that's lovely. Lovely to hear from Fozzy on that one. I mean, it's such a story for you, isn't it, Delith? The roller coaster that you've been on, because you were part of the original Wrexham team, which was eventually shut down sadly in 2016. And then the team was relaunched in 2018 by the Wrexham Community Trust. And then Rob and Ryan completed their takeover in February 2021. And you rejoined in the summer of 2021. So many milestones in this story. What has changed between the old team and the new one, would you say?
I think the biggest thing and the main thing is that we have the club's full backing now. I'd never been part of a team where the women's section is valued just as much as the men's. Like, when we speak with Rob and Ryan, when we've met them and they see it, they're so supportive and they're not false about anything. They just love it and they just want us to do really, really well. And it's nice that we get these messages of support from the men's first team players as well. Like, obviously, Ben Foster sent me a video this morning, and Phil Parkey, he was in our changing room before the game at the racecourse wishing us luck, and we had a few of the players there watching as well. So just the whole vibe, and even like the fans, like we've had more fans this year support us, and obviously the attendance at the racecourse a couple of weeks ago just sums it all up, really. So that is probably the main thing from the old time to the new time, is that full support from the club. And it's like, it's one club, whether you're playing for the men's team or the women's team, the girls' team, that's all one club. And with my experience through coaching and playing, you don't get that really. Even at the biggest clubs, you don't really get that support. But Wrexham being the best support I've been involved with.
Could you have imagined when you were in that team, the original Wrexham team, to where you are now? Could you have imagined this ever happening? Because it must seem like a dream, right?
Absolutely. Like, I've been a Wrexham fan my whole life as well. My dad's grown up in Wrexham and he's always took me and my brothers to the games and stuff. And like, as Wrexham fans, we never could have imagined this would have happened to the club as a whole. The club's been through really tough time financially as well, and a history of difficult owners and stuff like that. So how everything is now, it's just, as a Wrexham fan, as a Wrexham player, it's just amazing to see and really exciting for what the future holds.
I know obviously Rob and Ryan play a massive part in that, but the community as well, lifting you up, like you said, the amount of people that came to watch, how important is that to you and the team?
It's fantastic. Like, all season we've had so many fans coming to watch us, and it's really nice because there's a lot of young girls coming to watch us as well, as with their mums and sisters or as their own football teams are coming to watch us. And it's another thing about all this, like, we're buzzing about playing promotion, getting into the Adrian Premier League, but we know that we're inspiring young Welsh girls. And as someone who is, I coach in the Welsh setup as well as part of one of my other jobs, and I played football for years, it's really important for me that we're having a hand in helping to improve and inspire the next generation in North Wales of young girls. Really, really important for the future of Welsh women's football.
Speaking of the future, there's going to be some big changes coming your way now for you and the team. What does this mean now? Because we said that you talked at the beginning that you're back at your day job today as you're talking to me. So what does this mean now? Will you become semi-pro? Will you have to train more often? What will you have to give up your jobs to concentrate on this?
I will be totally honest. We don't know a lot about it. We know as much as everyone else does, really. I think a lot of it is riding on whether we got promoted or not. So now that we're promoted, I think we'll get to know more details about it all. But the fact that we might be paid some money to play, that I've never been paid to play in my life. So it's a little bit of a dream come true. But yeah, the details of how it's going to look, how it'll work, I'm totally honest. I don't know just yet.
All right. So from an emotional point of view, from that sort of point of view, do you feel different now? Do you feel like, yeah, I'm a Adran player now? Does it feel different?
We're still absolutely buzzing. We know we've got a tough year. It's going to be tough next season. We know the type of teams that are in that league, but we've shown that we can compete with them this year. We've beaten teams in that league as well. And it's just going to be a completely different ball game going from winning. We've won every game this season in the North Wales League to having to really graft and try hard. And I think the game yesterday was a bit of a look into the type of games that we might have to deal with next year. Because Britton Ferry were a very good team and equally deserve to be promoted as well. And it's just a shame that only one of us could go up. Then the Welsh Cup final next week, so they obviously deserve to be there as well. But yeah, it's really, really good feeling to be able to have a chance of competing the best in the highest league in Wales as well.
Well, before you go back to reality and back to the day job, I have to ask you, Delph, what is it you actually do?
I have three jobs. So this is my day job. It's like I work for a company called Denbighshire Leisure Limited. We're sport development, basically. Going to schools that out in the community with kids all the way up to the elderly. My other job is I work for Liverpool Football Club. So I'm the under-21 women's goalkeeper coach. So that's part-time along with this one. And then my third job is I work with the Welsh FA, with the Wales under-19s and the goalkeeper coach there. So whenever there's a camp, I'm away on that. So I was away on camp last week, actually, with the team in the Euro qualifiers that we had. So, yeah, three jobs. And then I play football on the side for fun. But that's gone massive now as well.
And it's going to keep growing and growing. I am sure of that. Absolutely sure. Della, thank you so much for joining me. The goalkeeper, Wrexham, all the best for the next season as well in the Adran Premier.
Thank you very much.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Now we're going to look ahead to the big one, the Champions League semi-finals, with not one, but two English teams. The Athletic's Charlotte Harper, Art de Rocher and Laia Cervello are here with me to chat this through. And we've got a lot to talk about. So my first thing we want to get going is, what has changed since the teams last faced off in a Champions League? Let's start with you, Art, talking about Arsenal.
Hi, guys. Yeah, I think from an Arsenal perspective, it's been really interesting to see them grow under Jonas Edvald, even going back to before they played Wolfsburg last season. So the Barcelona games in the group stages of last season, I think they were just across both opponents shown a real lesson in terms of the benchmark that they had to reach, definitely on the pitch. I remember the Barcelona game, there was a point where I think Arsenal were trying to build up and Barcelona had like 9 or 10 outfield players in the Arsenal half. And that was just a real kind of eye opener in terms of how teams can smother you in Europe. And I think Arsenal, in a way, have started to do that to their opposition, both in the WSL and in the Champions League. I think in the Bayern Munich game, even in the first leg, you just saw how intense they were. And obviously they've fed off the fans at the Emirates. So I think they've got a lot stronger foundations than they did when they played Wolfsburg last year, which should put them in decent stead. But of course, the injuries to Kim Little, Vivian Miedema and Beth Mead are not so timely. So it'll be a difficult one, but I do think they'll still have a lot of belief, especially with how they've performed over the last month against Chelsea in the Conti Cup final and Bayern and Manchester City in the league as well. So I think it'll be a really interesting one to see how their development has gone.
Kim Little is out for the rest of the season with a hamstring injury. Of course, that's a massive impact for Arsenal, not just on the terms of the WSL, but also for the Champions League as well, mate.
Yeah, major. Obviously, it happened during the Bayern Munich second leg in a really weird moment where she was brought down on the counter-attack, but no foul was given. And now she's out for the season. But I think for Arsenal, they've already kind of looked at what their next solution can be, which is Leah Williamson stepping into midfield. And what's, I guess, interesting is they're not just looking for Kim Little 2.0. So obviously, Leah Williamson and Kim Little are two very different profiles of players. And it's a good thing, I think, that Jonas Hidovar has clocked onto that. And I think I spoke to him after the Manchester City win, and he said, what I've realised now is basically I can't shoehorn players into specific roles. I need to play to their strengths. And I think the whole 90 minutes against Manchester City was just a demonstration of that, really, where Arsenal benefited from Williamson being a lot more aggressive than Little tends to be. And that's what really got them control of that game after a difficult first 20 minutes. So I think that's what they're going to really feed into. And it helps that it is Leah Williamson who is that person, because I think we saw at the Emirates against Bayern that not just her alone, but there is a lot more that goes into the energy around that team when the fans are on their side. And I think at the Emirates, you really felt that, where the fans were very annoyed at certain points with, say, certain decisions, but also they were very encouraging at certain points in the game as well. And I think the players really feed off that. So for now, without Kim Little for the rest of the season, it's about finding a way that suits Arsenal to play, which I think they have found. But also, I guess if that doesn't work, then what's the plan C? And I think they've also shown glimpses of that against Manchester City as well, when they went to a back three and were a bit more, I don't want to say dependent, but they utilized the wide areas a bit more, I'd say. And yeah, it's just an interesting time, I think, to see how that squad is really working. Because I think when you rewind to the squad Hidovar inherited, there wasn't as much depth, especially when you look back to when Joe Montemurro was in charge. I think there were games where he only had four or five players on the bench. So yeah, it's definitely an interesting time where I think Arsenal are showing that they are a lot more than just Beth Mead, Vivian Miedema and Kim Little. I think the fact that they've gone this far without those players is a real testament to the squad.
How did you react to that scoreline of Bayern Munich 0, Wolfsburg 5? Because somebody sent me that.
Yeah. Oh. So that went, obviously, it was massive in terms of the Arsenal Twitter circle. And I didn't really know what to think of it, because so just before the second leg against Bayern, I think they beat Wolfsburg and then came to the Emirates. So I honestly don't know what to think of it. And I think if I think too much, I'll just stress too much. So
and we don't want that for you, Art. We don't want you to stress.
No. So honestly, I saw it and I thought, wow. And then I went on with my day.
I love that. I feel Charlotte for Chelsea, they've been on this real roller coaster ride when it comes to the UEFA Champions League, haven't they? Because we were both at that absolute epic against Lyon. I think we've both recovered from that now. Chelsea, of course, they lost 4-0 to Barcelona in the 2021 final. So what's changed for them, do you think, since they last met?
That final was really quite odd. Remember, we were in COVID. So I flew out to Gothenburg. There were no fans, really eerie. And Chelsea conceding that own goal within the first minute, it just didn't go to plan for Chelsea against Barcelona at all, and they were completely outclassed. But a lot has changed in that 2 years, and a lot hasn't. So that first final for them, it really felt like they were the newbies, quite inexperienced, going in with kind of wide eyes, as not sure what to expect. And now they've got that experience under their belt, and you can't fake or replicate that Champions League final experience, especially against a team like Barcelona. So on that front, you think, okay, Chelsea in a really good place. They've racked up this experience. Their Champions League group stage was very clinical, very efficient. Only Barcelona scored more goals than them. They really performed well away against PSG. But then you come in and Chelsea have never really got into fifth gear this season. We haven't seen the full clicking, well-oiled machine that Chelsea can be. And similar to Arsenal, injuries, Chelsea are without their first choice centre-back pairing of Millie Bright. Emma Hayes said she's definitely out for the first leg. Khadisha Buchanan is a maybe as well. And if you think Pernilla Harder and Fran Kirby started that game against Barcelona, and there, well, we saw Harder was in the squad, but Fran Kirby is still injured, and Chelsea are without Jisoo Yun as well. So that squad has done it before, and there is a core of that squad. Only 13 of the squad members who played against Lyon were involved in the 2021 Champions League final defeat to Barcelona. So they do have that core, but they also have new additions. I mean, Lauren James, she wasn't even in the picture in 2021. Mjelda was injured in that final. And then you've got additions like Perisic, Kanarid, Kankovic. So yeah, a lot has changed, but not a lot. It's a weird one.
It's a weird one indeed. Laia, for Barcelona, I feel like there's an injury thread that is running through this as well, because, you know, Arsenal have got their issues, Chelsea have got their issues, and Barcelona as well have got their issues because there's no Puteas. Unfortunately, that's going to be a big blow. So for what's changed for Barcelona as well over the last couple of years?
The main thing the team has gained is in terms of names. They have like strengthened very well over the last few years. In 2021, for example, like that game, for example, the fullbacks were Marta Torrejón and Leila Wahabi. Now you have Lucy Bronze, which is like one of the best players that Barça has for now. Also, Fridolin Arolfo, who gives a lot to Barcelona. She's one of the Jonathan Giraldez key players. I think they have grown a lot in terms of scoring goals also. They have better stats than they had that year. But I think at the same time, that year, like in 2021, they had all the makings of a perfect year. But I think like the lack of competition in the Spanish league has affected the team, because, I mean, they are used to win. And when they start a game and they are not winning, or maybe they concede a goal in the first minutes, I think they just show their weakness, which is their mentality. I think it showed up like last year against Olympique de Lyon in the final, and I think it's going to happen again if the team is in a similar situation.
We've seen Alexia Putellas back in training, and it wouldn't surprise me if Barcelona named her on the bench for the second leg, just because of that name and that power that it brings.
Yeah, I think that maybe Jonathan Giraldez would bring Alexia for the second leg, as you were saying, just for having Alexia in the bank. I think that's really, it would show like strength to the team, and also having like the best player in the world just there would be like something that maybe could scare Chelsea. But I'm not optimistic on Alexia playing for like in 1 month more. So, I mean, maybe she could be there, but I don't think she's going to play.
Laia, how big is the expectation for Barcelona to lift the trophy now that Lyon are out? What is the vibe around the team? Do they believe that they are the favourites to lift the title?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, like the environment here in Barcelona, everybody was saying that this wasn't the year for Barça to win the Champions League again. Everybody thought, sorry, Charlotte, that Olympique Lyon would pass to the next round, that would be like the next rival for Barcelona. And now that it doesn't happen, I think people just remember like the two last times maybe Barca has been in the final, which has been with a little bit of luck. I mean, they have played well and they have deserved to be there, but also if you have maybe some more physical rivals, it wouldn't be that easy for Barcelona. And I think it's not that year to be optimistic on Barcelona winning the Champions League. But I think just maybe having Olympique Lyon kicked out of from the competition would make things easier for them.
That really surprises me, Laia.
Mm.
Like, what? You know, you think Lyon are out, and so Barcelona have beaten Chelsea before. Okay, they lost to Lyon last year, but they've got the quality, they've got the depth. Yes, they suffered defeat to Bayern Munich, but their performances have still been decent. Like, what? Why the lack of optimism, Laia? We, from an English perspective, we see Barcelona as these powerhouses, the juggernauts that should be expecting to win the Champions League.
Yeah, I think like maybe we have used ourselves to Barça winning everything in Spain. Like, I mean, there's no competition really in La Liga. I mean, like the difference between Barça and even Real Madrid, it's massive for now. They are the only team that have believe in their women's team. And I think that's something that it shows up in every game. And I think maybe because now you have like the feeling that maybe Barça, it's more weak than maybe other years. That's why we are not that optimistic. But obviously, if you see the numbers, if you see the stats, you could see Barca winning the Champions League, of course. I mean, yeah, like in Barcelona, we are very pessimistic. Like it's our way of being. So it's that's why. I mean, if you see the stats, obviously you can consider Barcelona to like favorite. But Chelsea, the way they played against Lyon, the way they struggle, but they have like the mentality of winning the game. It's something that maybe in Barca it's not that present for now. I mean, so I think that's why maybe like some people it's not that optimistic with them.
Well, let's get some optimistic score predictions from all three of you then. So, Art de Roche, let's start with you. Wolfsburg v Arsenal, what are you thinking?
Oh, that is a very tricky one. Considering it's the away leg first, a 1-1 draw will probably be as optimistic as I'll go. I know, obviously, Wolfsburg were, I guess, the nemesis for Arsenal not even just last year, but if we look historically in the Champions League for the past 10 years, obviously the last semi-final Arsenal were in, it was against Wolfsburg. So I'd say take a 1-1 draw and then see what you can get at the Emirates, where I think they've sold about 40,000 already. So hopefully they can get 20,000 more.
I'm going to push you a little bit. So on the return leg, so you're going 1-1. So the return leg, back on home soil, what are you saying?
I will go. So this is going to just sound like fan fiction now. I'm going to say Wolfsburg go 1-0 up at the Emirates, and then the Emirates goes wild. And for some reason, it's Leah Williamson who scores from about 25 yards to make it 1-1. It goes to extra time. Nothing happens in extra time. And then penalties it is, and Arsenal go from pens. There's a bit of fan fiction for you guys.
And you've said it now, so it's out there in the universe. It's out there in the universe. Charlotte, your predictions for the first and second leg, please.
Oh, I mean, imagine if you'd asked me that against Chelsea Lyon with the second leg and then we'd gone to penalties. Anyway, I'll get to it. I'm going to go Barcelona 2-1 in the first leg and then 2-0 to Barcelona in the second leg.
Yeah, Charlotte is making me feel bad because I think she is more optimistic than me with Barcelona. Maybe I feel a little bit bad. I would say maybe 1-1 in London and 3-1 in Barcelona.
To Barcelona.
I mean, like playing at Camp Nou, I think like people is going to Camp Nou every time like the club decided to open the stadium for the women's team. And I think it's quite difficult to play with that atmosphere, and Barça is quite used to do it. So I think that would be like the main difference.
Well, we've got some brilliant semi-finals coming up for this weekend. And that is it for this week's Athletics Women's Football Podcast. Thanks to Charlotte, Art and Laia. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great to speak to Carl and Harriet earlier too. Cheers to producer Sophie for putting this together. But most of all, thanks to you guys at home for listening. Do join the chat using the hashtag AthleticWFP, all the handles at The Athletic FC and at Offside Rule Pod. Until next week, take care.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.